Governor Perdue, thanks for being with us on Closer Look. Good of you to make the time.
Glad to see you again, Dennis, and glad to visit with you.
Take me back a little bit. I recall sitting in the FEMA office in Atlanta watching the storm approach, and they had the briefings going on at the time with the folks in Washington, and it was clear even then that they really didn't know the extent of the storm, that the folks on the ground were having trouble communicating to the planners in Washington even before the storm hit the levees. And was that your impression as well at that time?
Well, it was, but the magnitude of Katrina was unlike anything we'd ever seen before. It was really historic in its level of devastation in so many ways. So I think as a country, we learned a lot. As a people, we learned a lot about ourselves. But it was unprecedented, I think, is the way to put it. And we were, for the most part, unprepared for that level of devastation.
As the storm was coming in, how long did it take before you realized, wow, it's going to affect us, and parts of it actually did hit Georgia, but how long would it take before you realize, okay, we're going to have people coming this way?
I think it was slower rather than sudden. The magnitude was almost like those waves around a hurricane. It rippled out, and oftentimes I remember Alberto in 94 with a big flood. It was not the winds or the devastation. It was that stationary twirling that produced so much rain here that created our flooding devastation in Georgia in 94. And Katrina was somewhat like that. I mean, the news got worse and worse every day. We couldn't absorb, I don't think, the level of devastation that you see oftentimes with a tornado or the hurricanes, and the impact that rippled out across the country, almost in every state. And it came slowly, and the challenges and the problems grew, and all the extraneous types of situations such as fuel availability developed after a while that we began, wow, this we're in this together. And although our homes are not leveled, we're in it together.
In the very first briefing, I think, that you had, you talked about how it was almost impossible to comprehend the scale of it. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what that was like? Can you still?
Well, I remember it was incomprehensible.
Yeah.
And we were just trying to be truthful. I mean, we've never practiced this level of devastation before. You have tabletop exercises for GEMA with FEMA and go through those, but this was not something anyone had ever contemplated. I do think some of the benefits that came from this, speaking of GEMA and FEMA, it was not our best day from a federal emergency management situation. It was not our best day, really, from the standpoint of NGOs that were serving these dislocated populations.
Non-governmental organizations,
yes.
Like charities and church-based
That's right.
groups,
yes.
And so forth.
Actually, probably the faith-based community got a lot of credit for stepping in when they were not necessarily trained to do it. But some of those who were trained, it was not. But you've got to consider the overwhelming aspect of that. And I don't feel hard about that, but we were just totally unprepared. And it led to a lot of chaotic situations.
Realistically, though, something like this, which hit us on so many fronts, I mean, you mentioned the gasoline supply, but there was also hospital space, supplies and equipment to send from Georgia to the areas that were hit, plus, of course, just the influx of people. Was there any way, really, as you look back on it, maybe we could have prepared better, but was there ever a way to prepare adequately for something like this?
I'm not sure there is, but I want to say this. While I've characterized the incomprehensible part of it, I was just so proud of our people at large, not necessarily the government organizations, not necessarily those nonprofits that were designed to step in, the people at large, whether it was churches or whether it was just individuals taking people in and providing for their needs in a humanitarian way, I know it happened in other states. I was had a front row seat here in Georgia, and that was one of the most gratifying things I think I've ever seen. Not only were we sending resources there, we were receiving people, many of them very infirm. If you remember the Dobbins, and we didn't know when they were coming in, the lack of communication, as you indicated, we didn't know when, what their status was, or any of that. And our people responded at the drop of a hat, many of them on call 24 hours, and they got there, got those people disseminated across the state in various beds, wherever they could be found, people volunteering their homes and volunteering their other institutions to take these people, really even prior to any type of compensation or anything like that was mentioned. It was just the goodness of their heart and the humanitarian heartbeat of Georgia I was very proud of.
Because you mentioned the people who came in who were sick, they had to evacuate the hospitals mm-hmm. in the areas that were hit by the storm. How much of a surprise was not just the influx of people, but how many of them really needed not just shelter, but medical help?
That was a huge surprise for me. And Georgia, I believe, did much more than its share nationally. We had Dobbins there, which was a great staging area and a great ability to translocate. But we had to coordinate the receiving places. You just couldn't leave them on the tarmac at Dobbins. You had to place them throughout the state. And that's when people came in and volunteered and communicated. Our defense force did a great job at that point in time. These were just citizens. They're not necessarily trained in these kind of things, but it was the best of the best of the heart of Georgia coming out, and made me very proud for that we would have a part in doing that. It's one of those things that makes me think about the verse. It's much better to give than to receive, and we were able to give because we're not in direct harm's way, although our citizens were hurting in many other ways. They had relatives, they had others. Another aspect of that is the way our academic institutions, from K through 12 to our higher education institutions, took those students in and just assimilated them, and knowing that they were under duress by losing their homes, many of them not even knowing what the status of where they had just been a few days earlier, what they would go back to, and they took them in and loved on them and educated them in a tremendous way. And many of our schools were impacted. Our local boards and our local superintendents and faculty and staff made me real proud to see that effort, as well as our university system and our private institutions.
In the process of coordinating all that, how much improvisation were you and the state agencies doing just to make sure that the citizens, the agencies, the church groups that were kind of ad-libbing on the ground could at least coordinate with each other so that it all went effectively and people got to where they needed to go?
I can put that in a daily time clock. Maybe 1 hour was planning and 23 hours improvisation, because you just reacted because you didn't know when the other wave was going to hit of people or issues or different things that arose from the devastation left by Katrina. And then we had the one that followed it as
Rita.
Well. So yeah. Sure. And it just kind of kept rolling there. You think of hurricanes as a one-time event, but the implication and the what happened from that kind of rolled up after the fact into a longer time frame.
Can you remember, maybe it's a single moment, maybe it's a particular episode or event where you had to step back and say, wow, we're in the middle of something that none of us has ever seen before?
I don't know if there was a particular moment. I think it was slowly evolving in all of our minds because it was cumulative. I don't think you could forecast the total impact at the beginning. Even after the hurricane had departed, I don't think you could forecast and accurately predict all the ramifications that would take place. So it was cumulative. And it was the greatest moment I've ever seen of just doing what it took. On everyone's part, and it didn't matter really whether it was your job or not. We had many people in state and local governments, and again, just civilians that just did what it took because that's what was needed at the time. But I don't think there was any one moment. I think we got so used to another wave coming in that we just said, you know, what's next? And we were expecting that. And at the time that began ebbing, then I don't think we even recognized at that point.
How frustrated were you at FEMA? Because certainly it has taken a lot of the brunt of the criticism for this, and a lot of it was because of its response in the storm zone itself. But it was also involved, of course, in finding shelter here. Did you think that they really did not have their act together?
Well, we have to preface it by giving them the benefit of the doubt that no one had ever seen anything like this before. But it was very chaotic, and there was very little coordination, and it was very frustrating for those of us on the ground trying to be there to supply the need when you had a lack of communication. And I was very frustrated and expressed that to the federal authorities all the way up to the White House over what was happening and what was not happening and where the deficits were. And I don't know that we ever really got in the groove. Now, I have to say that the coordination, we learned a lot. All of us learned a lot. And the coordination between FEMA, GEMA, I think after 9/11 and then after Katrina has got exponentially better. And I think we're much better prepared in a coordinated way. I think our local security, our local emergency people, I saw that after even smaller floods or different natural disasters, there was a much better protocol of coordination than there had ever been during Katrina.
One of my memories is of covering a shelter, one of the big sort of intake and shelter facilities mm-hmm. in Forest Park, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. And you came in with some high-level officials from the administration. And it just seemed that you all were getting a real ground-level look at the magnitude of the humanitarian needs at the time. Not that you didn't have some idea before, but these were folks who could run up to you and talk to you if they wanted to. What went through your mind at that point?
I don't think you could get an indication. This was not something you could appreciate from a command center somewhere afar. I think to see the human difficulty and the human threat and the human fear, you had to be among those who were evacuated. And that's that made it so real and so personal. That and I think that was one of the things that frustrated me, is that you had some people in charge that were trying to direct things, resources, and allocate different things without being on the ground and knowing what was actually happening. And there was a lot of miscommunication about what was going on, how well we were doing. And many times I felt like the public relations people were running the show because they were giving one story about how well we were responding, but I was out there and it wasn't happening, and that was one of the most frustrating things.
Did anybody come up to you, either on that visit or at any of the others you made, to people who had been evacuated with a story or a plea or anything that struck you particularly?
All of the above. It was heart-wrenching, the stories, but it was also immensely gratifying with their gratitude. They were extremely gratified and thankful and expressed that in really tearful kind of ways that were very moving. And oftentimes when you have tragedy, they want to blame and why didn't you, why couldn't you, why wouldn't you? But when they got here and saw that we were doing the very best that we could to receive them and to stabilize their lives as much as we could, the gratitude was just overwhelming.
Over time, though, I think everyone came to realize that the temporary shelter idea that was put into place initially, for obvious reasons, wasn't going to stay temporary, that there were people who were maybe never able to go home or certainly wouldn't be able to go home for years and then had no place to be. At what point did you realize that? And then, you know, you have to think, well, how does the state respond to this? We have these folks here and they can't go home.
That was true. As we began to realize that there was no place to go home, there was no home to go home to, the assimilation, I don't know that we ever really calculated or were able to calculate how many citizens Georgia gained permanently as a result of Katrina, but I hear stories from time to time, and I see people that, you know, we chit-chat with a where are you from kind of thing, and we hear a Katrina story, and their eyes light up about the new life they've made here just as a result of that tragedy that happened to them then. And it again, that's gratifying to see their assimilation into that. And as I said, the many people stayed because they saw, first of all, they were fearful there was nothing to go home to, and they saw the chance for a new life. And that's when Georgia's heart and its hands and its arms opened up, I think, in a magnificent way that made me proud of our people and our state.
And how difficult was it to come up with a plan for people to make that transition, though? Because certainly the state is one of the agencies that's going to be involved in that.
Well, it is, but this is where the public more and more became involved in non-official capacity. And taking people in and housing them sometimes for weeks and months at a time until they could find some place to stay. You can imagine with that kind of influx, there's just not that available housing out here to do that. But they would help them find, and sometimes they would house them in their homes for weeks. I mean, I think the federal government can be accused of just throwing money at situations like this, but money was not necessarily what was needed. It was the care of people that only, you know, real people in real situations can give. It was not necessarily an institutional issue. It was one by one, one family to one family, and one person to one person that made the difference.
There was some talk at the time, as I recall, some voices in the media, for instance, saying, well, a lot of these folks who are coming either won't be able to make it, or that some of them are even criminals or gang members, et cetera. And I'm sure you heard a lot of that. How did that seem to you at the time? And was that something that the state even took into account? Because you mentioned before the response of Georgia, people loving on them. There were some folks who said, we don't need these folks here.
Well, there was some fear regarding, you know, we don't know who is among us, but by and large, I cannot recall any negative situation or circumstance that occurred to make that fear come true. I think for the most part, it was overwhelmingly positive and a real act of humanitarian altruism, not necessarily people taking advantage of the goodness of the heart of people. I just don't know. I don't recall. I'm sure there must have been some, Dennis, but I don't recall any scams or anything like that that was perpetrated among any of the people that came.
A lot of these efforts took money. Did the state, while it was spending money on helping the people coming in, did it have to make monetary contributions to places, perhaps school districts, law enforcement, rescuers, all of that sort of thing, to respond as well? Because the state was, as tough as it was, better equipped than some of the localities.
That is true. At every level, people just did what it took. We tried to send the signal at the state as we were able, if they were wise in their contributions, expenditures, we would do our best to make them whole. We were depending a lot, obviously, on FEMA's commitment over that, which sometimes was frustrating to justify. But we did have to send the signal, but I'm convinced that people would have done what they did irrespective of that commitment. The good thing about it was it just wasn't an act of expected compensation to be reimbursed. It was just these people are hurting and we're going to do what it takes. And at every level, whether it was individually, a family, a community, a school district, a county, a city, they did what it took. And that was, I guess, the thing that made me the most proud. But there were financial considerations, and we made sure our state agencies knew where there were legitimate needs and they had the authority to meet those needs.
And if I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, the feds in one way did come through when it came to helping with medical care for those who couldn't afford it through Medicaid and so forth. I don't know how long that took. Yeah. But that seemed to be one instance where the federal response was a little cleaner than it was in other places. But
they did that, and in education to some degree. They were helpful in compensating some of our school districts for the uncounted students that they would have in their districts. So both of those were very helpful.
When you look back on it 10 years later, is it still incomprehensible? In other words, you look back and say, I can't believe we went through that.
I think that's an accurate statement, is that it literally was so overwhelming. While you're in the midst of that, you get immersed and you do what it takes, but I don't think you fully appreciate the magnitude of all the things that were going on, but because they flood in, no pun intended, they just flood in so from every direction that you are literally immersed in that. So I think to some degree it's still incomprehensible over what happened and how big it was. No, none of us would want to go through that again or anything like that again, but I would have to say that all in all, it made me proud as a Georgian because of the way Georgians responded, and I wouldn't give anything for that memory. If you have to go through something like that, of the altruistic actions of many people, we see so many evil things in the world today, but that was pure goodness.
You mentioned some of the lessons that we've learned since then, and obviously it's continued since your time in office. Mm-hmm. Looking around the state now, because you're still very involved, what do you think we have learned from Katrina that will help us for whatever emergency might happen in the future?
I think the protocol between local, state, and federal government is much more secure and much more effective and efficient than it was at that time. We learned from 9/11, but we also learned from Katrina, two totally different types of disasters. But the protocol of response and really communication levels and authority, chains of command over those kind of things, that's important when you need to respond to situations like this. And I think our ability to rise to that occasion can happen more quickly, more effectively, and more efficiently today because of the integration of our local emergency management people, from volunteer firefighters all the way up to the larger units in metropolitan areas. And local government, state government, and federal government is much more integrated and assimilated with the protocol plan.
Because we're also speaking on this special to then-mayor, former mayor, Shirley Franklin, mm-hmm. of Atlanta. Of course, Atlanta took large numbers of folks who had, mm-hmm. who had to come in. In communicating with her at the time and with the rest of the city government, was it going smoothly for you? I mean, did you pick up some of these lessons through working with Mayor Franklin and the city?
Well, we did pick up lessons that way. I don't think we were doing it very well because that three-legged stool was not all fit together at that point, as I think it is better now. But we were dependent upon communication from the federal government for a lot of things, and we were there trying to make sure our communities knew what was going on, and we didn't know oftentimes. And you have to think too, Dennis, this is really before the social media of Twitter or Instagram or those kind of things. Frankly, I think those are tools that help deal with these kind of things better now.
You mentioned a moment ago that you occasionally run into people who tell you Katrina stories. Is there one that sticks with you that where you've had an encounter with somebody years later and you've thought, wow, some good came from all of the bad things that happened?
I'll tell you one that's very personal to me, because this is a painting that hangs on my wall, in our wall in our home, in our den. And one of the refugees was a lady who was not a professional artist, but loved to paint. And she came to the little community of Bon Air and saw the house and the home place where I grew up, which was no longer occupied at that time. But it was my father and mother's house they went to in 1938. And it was a house where I grew up, and she painted a picture of that homestead, that farmstead there, and gave that to me as a gift, as a memorial to the overall effort. She was one of the ones that stayed, and that's a constant reminder to me of how they were so grateful, and they wanted to give back.
Former Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue, thank you so much for giving us this time. We really appreciate it.
Dennis, I've enjoyed visiting with you again.